From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. As we enter the fourth year of a world with the COVID virus and the disease continues its march around the globe, scientists are looking at how this disease works and why it's so very different from the diseases that we're used to, like influenza. Dr. David Pate has been taking a deep dive into the science of COVID, even as it continues to evolve. He's the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and our very own expert on health issues, especially COVID-19. Hello, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Okay, so you have been looking at COVID on your blog with some fascinating blog entries, and your latest two have been talking about, one of the main things is COVID seasonal? So let's start there. I think we know influenza can be seasonal. People in the summer are less likely to get it up here, while down in the other half of the world, they are getting it because it's winter. Explain seasonal and then why COVID is not.
Right. Well, I decided to write this because I have heard so many people saying, and certainly the CDC has kind of given us the impression without saying it, that it's a seasonal virus, but it clearly is not. And so I provide that evidence on the blog. I show what a seasonal virus is, which is exactly what you just mentioned, Samantha. Influenza is a great example. We predictably get sharp increases in influenza activity here in the Northern Hemisphere each winter in starting in our late fall, and just as we did this past flu season. And we know that's seasonal because the rest of the time of the year, even though there are some influenza cases still throughout the year, they're very low numbers. And so nothing like what we see with the yearly spike for seasonal flu. And as you also pointed out, another trait of a seasonal virus is if it's truly seasonal, because the Southern Hemisphere in those temperate climates should be kind of the opposite of ours, you just compare when we're getting our spike and when we get our spike of influenza is about 5 to 6 months. In fact, I give an example where I show that, and it was almost exactly 5 months after cases started going up in Australia that they then started going up in the United States. And that's very helpful to us because then we can look to see, as I've done throughout your show, look to other places of the world to see what's going on to COVID to kind of anticipate what might happen here. With influenza, we do that every year. We look at what's going on down in the Southern Hemisphere because we know 5 or 6 months later, we're likely going to see the same thing up here. So how severely ill are people getting in the Southern Hemisphere during their winter? Is it affecting kids mostly or older adults mostly? Or what population is ending up in the hospital? What does the flu vaccine seem to be matched? So we can answer some of those questions because it's seasonal. Now, when we look at COVID, what I show is that we have spikes, surges, waves, whatever you want to call it, really in every season in the Northern Hemisphere. And then when you look to the Southern Hemisphere, it matches completely up. It's not like influenza where they get theirs and then 5 or 6 months later we get ours. They're happening pretty much at the same time across the world. So I thought that was an important question to answer. COVID is not seasonal. Maybe one day it will be, but it is not today. And then I talk about, well, what are seasonal viruses? Why are they seasonal and why does it matter?
Well, and I thought that was fascinating because I think I thought of the flu as a seasonal virus because of, well, primarily the weather. It gets cold, more people are indoors together, you know, breathing on each other and sharing germs, right, as it were. But you have you have all kinds of factors in there that, besides that, one of them I wrote down just because I was amazed: drier nasal passages in winter, and so easier for it to get up your nose.
Yeah, and it's, now let me just first say that I don't think there's any scientist that thinks that we completely understand the seasonality of viruses. We certainly have learned a lot, but I don't think we have the full explanation yet. But certainly there are factors, like you started off with, that are human behavioral factors. So, for example, with influenza, one of the biggest drivers of influenza epidemics that we have every year is school-age children. They tend to be the ones that they get it in school, and then they transmit it to the families. Mm-hmm. And so just think about, when are kids in school? And you can look at to see when they're transmitting some of these diseases. So kids are the major driver, school-age kids are the major driver of influenza, but the timing of influenza does have to do with additional factors about how does that virus transmit the best, and so what weather conditions favor it. The other things is anything that's transmitted through the air, either droplets or aerosol, humidity can be a factor, because in many cases, high humidity impedes the transfer of some of these viruses, because those that particulate matter that carries the virus, if you have more moisture, it gets wetter, that gets it heavier, it doesn't go as far. Mm. Now, on the other hand, there are some viruses that love for it to be a little bit more humid. Like poliovirus, for example, transmits better when the humidity is higher. So there's all these different factors that can impact why a virus is seasonal, if it is, and if it is, what season most benefits it. Because even seasonal viruses don't all happen during what we typically consider cold and flu season.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so you are looking at the science of COVID, and I think you're finding out, first and foremost, COVID is weird.
it is indeed.
Especially in the virus world and the way that that it acts and responds. You were looking at, in these blog posts, about waves of COVID. And one of the questions that scientists are trying to answer is, why were there fewer waves early on, as opposed to what we're seeing now, where there's sort of waves. And I think this is fascinating. And I think the thing I wrote down was, did we have fewer waves early on because basically we were hiding at home? I mean, this is just one of the possible factors, but I was curious.
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's fascinating. And I show on my blog a picture of what we call an epicurve. Most people have seen epicurves. They just don't know that's what an epicurve is, because if you've been following COVID at all, you're almost certain to be seeing these. And what an epicurve is basically just a graph along the axis that is the y-axis, or for those of you that didn't pay attention during math, that's the vertical one. That is the number of cases. And then across the x-axis, or the one that goes horizontally, that's time. And that's where you see these waves plotted out. And so what is fascinating about this COVID, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, compared to, say, influenza, because everybody's trying to make this analogy that COVID's like influenza. I think they're hugely different. The one we've already talked about, influenza is clearly seasonal, and certainly COVID is not, as I make the case. But there's these other interesting factors. We have never had a, if you want to try to lump SARS-CoV-2 into a cold and flu type virus, we've never had a cold and flu type virus that maintained high transmission throughout the year, even if it's peaks and valleys like COVID does. And for now, like you were mentioning, 4 years on in a row, we've never had that. Mm-hmm. If you look at what is the average number, if you take no precautions against influenza and you're out and being exposed, how often will you get influenza? It looks like every 4 to 5 years you'll get infected if you don't get flu shot, don't take some precautions, those kind of things. On the other hand, what we're seeing with COVID is people can be infected every year, and for some, even more frequently. We've never seen that. Now, the other thing that's so interesting is, like you said, well, if it's not seasonal, why do we get these surges, these spikes? Why do they go up and come down? And that is one of the most fascinating questions to me. We don't have the ultimate answer on that, but I discuss that and try to provide the evidence and lead you to what at least a really good hypothesis is if it doesn't turn out to be the answer. And so, as you said, in the first couple of years, those spikes, those surges, they were spread out more than they are now. Why is that? Well, I think you're right that the fact that we took some precautions, initially, a lot of people were working from home. Initially, lots more people masking than now. And that's going to mitigate spread. It's going to reduce spread. And so you won't have as many of these things. But later, so the interesting thing is when you go back and you look at that first year as the virus mutated, the first variant that showed up in that first year, it was one nucleic acid difference. Now, people don't know what a nucleic acid is. You have the virus has genetic material, the genetic material that allows it to reproduce. It's made up of a series of nucleic acids. So we're just talking about one of those. It actually has about 30,000 nucleic acids. This one had one change, and it really increased the transmissibility. If you look at since Omicron, what has been the rate of these nucleic acid changes? We saw 28 per year on average. Whoa. We saw one variant recently that had 30 changes just itself. So it's clearly mutating at a faster rate, and that's probably because we have transmitted it so widely. So what I think is two last points about this. One is we heard lots of talk for the first couple of years about herd immunity. If we could just get herd immunity, let's keep the old people at home. Let's get young people out there, get them infected. That'll build resistance and herd immunity and protect everybody. Well, herd immunity hasn't happened. If it did, you wouldn't see those continuing spikes like that because we're not having herd immunity. The second thing is what seemed to characterize the increase in fitness of the virus the first couple of years is increased transmissibility, mostly around how well it could bind to that ACE2 receptor. But if you look now in the last 2 years, what the advantage seems to be is the immune evasion, the ability to have enough changes of the virus that whatever antibodies you develop previously from vaccine or infection, they don't work as well. Mm-hmm. And that, I lead readers to believe, is probably the big reason why do we keep seeing these surges. And the other fascinating point is when we see one surge and it's coming down and then the next one comes out, it gets rid of the previous variant. It doesn't stick around. And so what clearly happened is the new variant is out competing the other. And it's probably because of that immune evasion. So I think we're learning a lot. I think we're going to learn a whole lot more.
We are. And your blog is invaluable, I must say. And we're going to put links to both of these blog posts up on our website. Dr. Pate, as always, I want to thank you so much for your insight and advice.
Oh, thank you, Samantha. Great to be with you.
We've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. He'll be back next week. If you have a question, a health question for our Dr. Roundtable, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.